Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 in Durango, Colorado. Today I'm talking with Mary Armstrong about her books, The Messiah, Two Valley Saga Book 1, The San Augustine, Two Valley Saga Book 2, When the Doves Coo, the prequel to the Two Valley Saga, and also her play, It Is Blood. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Well, thank you for sharing the, is it The Messiah? How do you say that?
Messiah.
The Messiah.
Yeah, and the Messiah, named after the small town here, actually after the valley, the Messiah Valley.
Messiah Valley, okay. Mm-hmm. So these books are from the Two Valley Saga, Book 1 and Book 2, and then you have a prequel also, When the Doves Coo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, well, before we go further, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what Two Valley Saga is?
Okay, sure. It's first two books of the series of five, and it covers 10 years from the mid 1880s until 1896. Where there was a murder here in 1896 of Colonel Fountain and his 8-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very well known and still talked about here. And it was unsolved, and bodies were never found. And you know, still to this day, I think it influences our political situation here between the Messiah Valley and the Tularosa Valley.
Right.
So it's about the 10 years leading to that. And it focuses on the Fountain family and the Oliver Lee family, mm-hmm, in the Two Valleys.
Mm-hmm. So you've taken a lot of historical facts and situations and people and put them into this these historical fiction stories, right?
Right, yeah. What I did was I took a fictional nephew of Colonel Fountain,
mm-hmm,
had him join the Fountain family, which they were a very entertaining family, to say the least, right?
Right.
And anyway, he comes to join the Colonel and reads law with the Colonel, so you know, he becomes involved in a lot of his law cases and stuff, and his political aspirations and so forth.
Right. It's great. Yeah. He hears a lot of different encounters of events that are going on around and people that are represented.
Right. Yeah. I really wanted to thread history through Jesus is the fictional, mm-hmm, nephew of the Colonel. I wanted to thread the historic aspects of that era through his coming of age story, really, because, mm-hmm, he joins the Colonel when he's 14.
Actually, it's written as if this were being written into Jesus's journal.
Right. Well, it's like a memoir.
Right.
Yeah, and the very first, which I know you suggested maybe I have a reading, and
yes,
the very first page of the book is really more of like a preface, mm-hmm, telling about how, you know, why he's writing this, and you know, and I'll get into that a little. I'll read it later when we have that come up. But yeah.
So what gave you the desire, I guess, to write the Two Valley Saga? I mean, in five books in the series, that's a lot of information.
Well, I'm not sure I knew quite what I was biting into when I got started on this. But I, I moved here in 2010, and one of the first things I did is I like to read about the history of the area that I moved to, and I've moved a number of times. So I happened to come across a book when I was getting some copying done downtown, and it was a book about the history of Las Cruces. And so I read that, and part of what was in that was a story about the fountains and about their unsolved murders and so forth. And that kind of pushed me on to another book, and to another book, and to another book. And then, you know, and I just got so absorbed into that whole era. Eventually, I actually wrote a one-act play about it. And it was like a sequel to the murders. It was about how the town reacted to the murders, and how the newspaper reported on it and so forth.
Right.
And that was actually performed here in our one act play festival in 2017. Yeah. So I knew I really wanted to write more about it, and I really struggled with how I might do that and make it make a fictional story so that it was entertaining but yet informative. And and eventually I happened on the idea of making it from the perspective of a fictional character who would come and kind of observe all that went on from more of a independent perspective.
Right, and I think it's interesting because Jesus comes from Mexico, so he's learning a lot, which helps the reader learn a lot, because this is all new to him. So I like him. He's a good kid. Smart.
Yeah. He gets into his fixes and stuff, but
yes,
yeah,
he does.
He's a fun guy.
A lot of that going around with this family.
Yeah, oh boy. Yeah.
Well, why don't you go ahead and read a little bit for us?
Okay, let's see. Okay, so chapter one of the Messia is entitled San Augustine Pass.
Okay.
And this part here is going to be like the preface. Okay. And the date on the preface is July 1927. This isn't how I remember it, but it is how Colonel Fountain, I, and others recorded it. I am now about the Colonel's age when I first met him nearly 40 years ago. After all these years of remembering, I was surprised by how different my memories were from the events that led to that fateful day. I can only conclude our meaningful incidents and thoughts were swept away by the more memorable for each of us. The mind has a peculiar way of exaggerating. The exhilarating becomes even more sensational while our blunders become burdensome. Our intellect rewards us, but it can also overwhelm us with guilt. Albert Fall's involvement in the Teapot Dome scandal recently resurfaced memories of the times I have written about here. Some recent newspaper accounts of Fall's life in the Mesilla and Tularosa Valleys didn't match my memories. After days of attempting to sort them out in my mind, I turned to the pile of journals I kept in my dusty attic. Those led me to the Colonel's extensive writings, Fountain family's and friends' accounts, and the old Rio Grande Republican weeklies. The Colonel once told me writing would help me sort out my thoughts. The result is this memoir. I was a boy of 14 when I arrived in the Mesilla Valley. Overall, I remember them as good times, but 10 years is a long time to go to in the Old West without lawlessness touching even the most law-abiding. And it's signed Jesus, Chuy, Perez, Contreras, Barazzi, Messi.
And then it starts.
Should I continue?
Let's talk for a minute, but keep your finger there because we might go back and read a little bit more.
Okay, sure.
So now that you've finished book one and two and the prequel, and those are out now, what are you covering in the others to come?
Well, books one and two were really more set in the Mesilla Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Book three is going to be much more set in the Tularosa Valley and with the Lee family.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it's kind of tricky the way I orchestrated that.
Ah.
But it's a bit of a cliffhanger at the end of book two.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You've seen that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So book three becomes much more about getting into really about where the conflict really started between the Lee family and the Fountain family and Albert Falls' place in that and that kind of thing.
You started this off with the play, It Is Blood, right? And then you grew from there. So what else have you written?
Well, I have a novel, which is I guess you would call it a dysgenic dystopian novel.
Oh.
Which I've not finished.
Okay.
It's about two-thirds finished, but it requires a road trip from Iowa to New Hampshire. And I want to actually do the road trip and finish writing it as I'm doing that. And I can't do that at this point. It's awaiting that.
Oh.
Of course, I did the play as well.
Mm-hmm.
I had a column in the Las Cruces Sun News for a couple of years, a weekly column that I wrote.
Oh.
Actually, was about golf, actually. I was a golf course architect. Yeah, I was a golf course architect before I moved out here.
Well, that explains why the settings are so thoroughly described in these books. I just love that.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's I don't know why I'm able to pull that off, but it's something I enjoy. So
I can
perhaps
tell.
That's the reason.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then your characters often give pause to looking at the scenery, which is beautiful in New Mexico. I mean, we can't deny that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people recognize that about New Mexico, and they probably would feel like you weren't really fulfilling, the setting if you didn't get into that some.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've read other reports of the fountains and their demise and the traumas surrounding them. And this take on it was definitely refreshing and different, getting right into the heart of it. Jesus calls the Colonel Zio, so he really endears him to us.
Yes. Well, Jesus is fictional, of course, but I made him half Spanish-American and half Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, the nickname for the colonel's wife also is Mia Tia.
Right, Mia Tia.
And so there's a little sprinkling of that sort of mixture of Italian and Spanish in here as well. And I wanted to, one of the things I wanted to really bring out about this period that I think a lot of people overlook is just how varied, the heritage of people who came to the Southwest was.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the story that you have in there about Bronco Sioux, now how much of that is true?
Well, pretty much all of it is true.
Really?
The things she did and the places she was are all accurate. The timing is accurate, but it's the difference is that all the accounts of her life that I found were all told by people other than her. There was never an account that was given from her perspective. And I thought, you know what? I think she deserves to have a voice here.
I think so.
So, I mean, I think I tried to make, you know, all the things that she did, you know, come from how she would have viewed it.
Exactly.
And maybe some of the circumstances that would have led to her needing to do what she did. Now, I don't want to, spoiler alert,
right.
I don't want to spoil it.
Right.
But, you know, in the end, I think, you know, that she is proven innocent, so.
Right. Yeah, I appreciate that you've given her a voice to explain why she did some of these things that might have seemed a little inappropriate. But she was trying to survive and take care of her boys.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, there's a lot that we didn't know, I felt.
Right.
So.
And there probably still is, and it takes quite the writer to start filling in some of those unknowns, making these people very real.
Yeah, that's my sister's name is Sue, and that's Bronco Sue is her favorite character.
I like her too. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So, do you want to read a little bit more? You said you had.
Sure.
Great.
Yeah. Okay, so then we're going to jump ahead to September 1886. I licked my lips and peered eastward down the foothills at a flat, dusty bowl. A mountain to my left. Another choice. I didn't want another choice. I wanted, dare I say it, my mother. The scent of cooking tortillas and the warm, reassuring enclosure of her hug. For most of my journey, I had kept my composure. At first it was an adventure, then a chore, and then quickly an ordeal. If I hadn't been so tired, I might have broken into a run, but where to or why, I did not know. I thought about the gringo in El Paso that directed me east of the Franklin and Oregon Mountains. Instead of staying along the Rio Grande, I could trust no one. I shook myself free from my childish thoughts. And the reins dropped from my hand. I turned to Facile. Thirsty? I asked. My mouth feels like it's stuffed with cotton balls from Papa's field. I tried to raise some saliva to my lips, but there wasn't any. I know Mia Tia is toward the setting sun, I croaked, but I'm so tired, my friend. If only there was something to the east. Something that would draw me away from climbing this mountain. But there was nothing. I stood in front of Cecile and took his head in my hands. His floppy ears twitched, and he muzzled my hand with some moisture. He was a slobberer. Ordinarily, if you could collect his slobber, by the end of the day, you could float a raft in it. That day, there wasn't a hint of moisture around his hairy mouth, and when I hugged him, his rough tongue didn't reach out in reassurance of his love. His dark eyes lacked their usual spunky mischief. We blinked together every few seconds. I kissed him between the eyes and his ears twitched again. I took my Boda bag from the saddle horn and shook it. Nothing. I uncorked it and turned it upside down above my other hand in front of Facile. Drip, drip, drip. Facile buried his lips against my damp hand and gathering moisture into his parched mouth. I returned the Boda bag to my saddle and repositioned and secured my satchel as Facile leaned against me. I patted him on his rump and he uncharacteristically flinched. Then I heard it, and the too familiar scream of vultures drew my eye to the sky. But the glare of the falling sun was blinding. Still, their grotesque beaks and naked necks were vivid in my memory. Were they waiting for us, or was it just an omen? Would we die here? My head felt as though it would fall from my neck, and I reached to support it. Facile turned up the trail toward the pass, and I trudged behind. If you run out of water, give Facile his head. He'll lead you to it. those were my father's last words when I left home near El Porvenir. Was it a week ago? I counted my campsites in my head. No, it's been 8 days. Las Cruces must not be far beyond that pass.
I really liked Facile. He was a good guy. Good girl.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Jesus, in his efforts and his struggles, and this kid off by himself trying to find where he's going.
Yeah, and some people might say 14 years old and he goes, all that distance by himself. And, really back in the day, 14 wasn't all that unusual that 14-year-olds might go off. I've heard stories, other stories of people that age or younger, making a long journey, from Texas to New Mexico and stuff.
It's true. At that age, he was considered a man, so.
Right.
And I like that you, in the Dubs coup, you gave us a little bit more background on Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yes. After I finished the first book, I had some people ask me some questions about, what's wrong with Jesus? Why is he act like that, and so I felt like maybe I should offer up some more background.
I don't want to give anything away, but he's a very real character, and I like that.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm glad you're writing more now. Do you make it a point to write every day on these?
Well, I try.
Good. Yeah, I
do try. A lot of days are spent in research.
Right.
I'm guessing probably, out of 10 hours, I probably spend, probably 7 researching.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially for historical fiction like this.
Right.
You've got to get the facts there, too.
Right. And one of the things that I do is I actually abuse the Rio Grande Republican historic newspapers as a really great resource for recreating the time.
Oh yeah, and, of course.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and it's also a great resource for timing. Mm-hmm, for my calendar, basically.
Right, for the timeline of the characters and the events.
Right.
So this Fountain family, they have this evening ritual where one or the other tells a story, and a lot of things and events in history are revealed that way. That's from different characters' points of view.
Mm, yes. Yeah, and that tradition, if you will, in the book of them using what they call the storytelling hearth, is fictional.
Right.
Although the accounts of the family do say that they did do a lot of this sort of thing, mm-hmm. where they would read to each other, or they would read poems, or different kinds of entertainment like that. And of course, McConnell was very theatrical. He was known for that. And he had brothers back in New York who were Shakespeare actors.
Mm-hmm. He drinks his wine while he acts out his... So
the story about him, his world tour, is actually it's true as well.
Or,
at least this was something that he wrote up, himself. And that's where it comes from. Now, some of the family doesn't quite agree with it, but that's what he said. So, this is all from him.
I was wondering, because and then he kind of says, this is a secret. I don't want you guys spreading the word here.
That's right.
And what a time to travel the world.
Yeah. And he did go to Columbia College. Yes, he did. Yeah.
Wow.
And he never graduated. Mm-hmm. At least there's no record of his graduation, but yes, he did.
So when can we expect to see the next book?
Well, I'm about, like right now, I'm probably about, I'm about 30 pages short of finishing the first draft.
Oh, great.
I'll probably have to go through a few months of edits and rewrites.
Right.
I'm hoping that it'll be out before the end of the year, but no. I wouldn't be promising it, I think.
That's understandable when it comes to writing. So, have you always read historical fiction?
I have. Well, not always. I went through a real phase here. I don't know, probably about 20 years ago, where I started reading a lot of Ken Follett books.
Oh yeah.
I read a lot of his. Almost, I think I read all of his books actually.
Oh.
Not long before I started this book, I really got into the Outlander series by Diana Gabaldon.
Oh yeah.
Mhm. And loved that. I kind of got a taste for, you know, how to weave a history through a story, a fictional story.
Right.
I was really turned on by that idea. So, I like lots of different genres. There was a time when I was really, into the dystopian, of course, which is why I wrote mm-hmm. the other book that I have. And I've been a pretty avid reader most of my life. So,
I think that many authors are readers,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's a
yeah.
reason for that. Now, you mm-hmm. this dystopian book you've talked about, are you going mm-hmm. to work on it while you're working on the other ones or not?
Probably not. Although I might need a break.
Yeah.
It's a grind, let me tell you.
I bet.
To working on the same story like this. And,
I can only imagine.
It gets to be quite a grind, but I enjoy it as well,
Right.
The other thing is that one of the things that really kept me going with the first book was that I talked to my mother every day. My mother is 89, and she's back in Iowa, where I was born and raised, and in fact, she still lives in a house that I was in high school.
Oh my.
So anyway, I talked to her every day at 4:15 in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and she knew that I was thinking about writing a book, and so I had a few chapters, and I said to her one day, I'm kind of not sure about this book. I said, I want to read this to you and see what you think, and so she loved it, of course. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day when I write something, I read to her every day.
Oh.
Yeah. And she just is, so she really loves Jesus. And she enjoys the book so much, and she gets so excited about, what's going to happen next? What's he going to do now? And,
I love that.
All that. And it's very encouraging for
right,
me.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That gives you deadlines and purpose and audience and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, so much. You can get my books on Amazon, of course,
mm-hmm.
and also at Barnes & Nobles. And if you're down in the Las Cruces area, my books are all the local bookstores pretty much, except for the university bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're in the area, look me up and I'll sign them for you.
Very good. Very good. And you have a website, MaryArmstrongAuthor.com.
Right. Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it very much myself. And I will certainly be tuning in now that I know about
good.
Your program.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. And that was Mary Armstrong talking to us from Las Cruces about her books, The Two Valley Saga, The Messiah, The San Augustine, when the doves coo. And we're looking forward to the next versions of that series. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, 103.3 in Durango, Colorado.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.